on State Government Innovation and Veterans will be in order. Today is Tuesday, May 17, 2011. Members, we have Senate File 1046 on the agenda today. This will be an informational-only hearing, and after we hear from Senator Senjum, we will take testimony, and we're going to limit testimony. We go back into session at 7 o'clock. I know there's some squeeze time after that. But we're going to try to limit the testimony to 30 minutes, 35 minutes per side here, or however we move forward on this. And then we will then have some committee discussion, and the intent is just to lay this bill aside and move forward. I know we have a couple of people that do have prior engagements, and I apologize for this starting later than what we had planned. So I'm going to give you the first three people that this committee would like to hear from, and then we'll get back to the selection of the others. We'd like to hear from Senator Senjum, followed by Mr. Hilger, and then followed by Annette Meeks. Those are the first three that we'd like to hear from tonight if we could. I know Ms. Meeks has a prior engagement. She would like to be heard. So, Senator Senjum, we'll start off with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, and to you, Mr. Chair, thank you for this hearing. We appreciate it. We hope that it's helpful in terms of better bringing forth and understanding the Racino proposal. The Racino proposal has obviously been before the legislature for a number of years. Senator Day, to my left, has carried this bill many, many times. It's not necessarily a new bill, but it's back once again. For those of you that aren't aware, and I can hardly imagine there's a person in this audience that isn't aware, Racino basically involves the establishment of slot machines, if you will, video gaming machines at Canterbury Park and running aces. And the reason for that, by and large, is to support the horse industry. Those two racetracks are very, very important to Minnesota from the standpoint of their viability. I think people will testify shortly, somewhat to the effect that without moving into a Racino mode at these two tracks, their life is probably somewhat limited in terms of their viability here in Minnesota. In that, I would simply offer they have to compete with horses and with horse owners who have options of running their horses anywhere in this country where their purses are much more viable. But beyond that, Mr. Chair, although I certainly love the horse industry and want this bill to support it, what has really attracted me to this particular bill is the idea that we would be able to put forth with the proceeds of Racino and put forth in the creation of a Minnesota Futures Fund, the development of an economic fund, a development fund that would put us perhaps almost second to none with respect to any state in the country with the ability to seek out businesses, to be attractive to businesses that might want to come to Minnesota, to retain businesses that may be thinking about leaving Minnesota, and that is, frankly, what is especially important to me. Several of you may be on the Economic Development Committee, the Jobs Committee. I'm not altogether sure what we have in the offering right now, but I'm going to guess maybe what we have available to keep and retain businesses is maybe a couple of million dollars. Obviously, this particular bill would raise for the Minnesota Futures Fund somewhere in the neighborhood of $250 million every biennium. With that money, we would be a powerful agent in terms of being attractive to businesses wanting to come to Minnesota. And if you happen to live in the area of the state where I do, and you see IBM locating in Dubuque, if you see Hormel Industries moving to Dubuque, if you see Featherlight Trailer leaving Grand Meadow across the line into Iowa, you kind of start to wonder. And then I would also add, Mr. Chairman, members, and I just happened to run across this. It's in your handouts, I think, the office of Governor Perry in Texas. I don't know if that's a relation or not.
Not really, Senator.
Not really.
But it could be a premonition to my next direction.
Okay. Well, welcome to Texas. No. but the point here is, here's one more example. If you read a third paragraph, we're losing frankly, jobs out of New Ulm, Minnesota. I think it's 54 jobs to a place in Englewood, Texas. And if you read the first line, it's talking about $194,000 was available through the so-called Texas Enterprise Fund. That was, I suspect, part of attracting this business to Texas. I would not suggest there were not other reasons that might relate to tax climate, regulatory climate, and so on. But nonetheless, this is, to some extent, a free agency game. If you look to, I think, the second to the last line, actually maybe the third to the last line, you'll see a number of, $433 million. That is what Texas has put forth in recent years. I think it's since 2004. To attract businesses to their state, and I think it's made a difference. We all know what Texas is from the standpoint of business climate. A little bit about the bill from the standpoint of what it says. Again, the Minnesota Futures Fund, which would be created under this fund or under this particular scenario, under this bill, it's a special revenue fund. It is not to be mistaken in terms of the general fund. And I will readily admit sometimes legislators and legislatures reach into special revenue funds, so it's not altogether sacred, but it's as sacred as we would make it as we work with it. But $250 million or thereabouts, there is a fiscal note, and these numbers kind of bounce around with estimates as terms of what a gaming machine would bring in, but 55%, generally speaking, going into job creation and retention, 25% of that $250 million in terms of growing new technology, 10% in terms of redevelopment grants, 10% in terms of grants to organizations, and so on and so forth. There would be, and if there were an opportunity to be present amendments tonight, I would have an amendment that would suggest that within this structure and within DEED, there would be a public oversight board that would manage, not necessarily manage, but at least oversee the activities of DEED within this structure. From the standpoint of the bill and how it's structured, from the standpoint of the state formula, the state would initially get 25% of the gross revenues up to the first $125 million, 30%, it would get 30% from $125 million to $200 million, and 40% thereafter. And then in addition to that, the racetracks would get 60% of that revenue up to the first $125 million, and it would decrease 55%, $125 million to $200 million, 45% after $200 million. 15% would go to the lottery. By the way, I didn't offer this, but the machines would be managed by the Minnesota Lottery, not by Canterbury or Running Aces. 1% would go to the city and counties in which these racetracks are located from the standpoint of any sort of public needs, public protection that might be necessitated simply because you have organizations like this working within your communities. Of the money that goes to the horse tracks, 14% of that would go into what we call the horse racing industry. 80% of that 14% would go for purses, and the other 20% something called Breeders Fund, which I can't comment, and another 4% for another aspect of this. I would offer that, I know Senator Day will do this, but if you look at the recent USA survey poll, 65% of those respondents favor Racino. And 28% oppose it, 7% say they're not sure. If you even boil that down in terms of ideology, 60% of conservatives, in fact, favor this, 37% do not. Mr. Chair and members, this is an important, I think, proposal to look at from the standpoint of, again, saving certainly our horse racing industry, but also really putting Minnesota on the map from the standpoint of an economic development program that can be effective and it compete nationally and internationally in terms of business growth and development in Minnesota. And that's what really does excite me about this. We will have finally, if we do this, the resources to be competitive and to do what we all know we need to do, and that's create jobs in Minnesota. We have a job-hungry state right now, and we need to find a way out of this situation. And I know, and I will tell you, and I totally agree that anybody says we need to look at our tax climate and we need to look at our regulatory climate, that is for sure. But we also need to be able to be competitive from the standpoint of the free agency part of job, not only retention, but certainly recruitment, and be able to compete for businesses that are going to be looking at Minnesota, literally worldwide, and wondering whether or not we are a state that they might be interested in. So, Mr. Chair and members, I'll stop there and just, again, thank you once again for this informational hearing. Certainly stand for questions, but we have some other witnesses here as well.
Thank you, Senator Senjum. Let's move on to Jeff Milder.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for giving me the opportunity this evening to go over a little bit about what we're all here for, I hope. We're here for an industry that in 1982, the citizens of Minnesota passed a pari-mutuel gambling bill. 66% yes, 34% no. At that time, the ag business jumped into the business hard. I have a lot of friends, including myself. We spent many, many dollars, many millions of dollars throughout the state to build up the farms, to build up the agricultural business, to build up tractors. We bought trucks. We bought trailers. There wasn't anything here before that. If you look at these charts, I'm going to show you what happened so you'll get an idea how we tie purses and foal or breeding industry together. This is a chart of the foals in the years starting at the far left of 1985. We go into where we get pari-mutuel gambling in 19. The reason it says 85, it takes 3 years to get the babies to the ground. You breed a mare, she's foal for a year. You don't run it till it's two. So we finally had a foal crop of 1,000 foals in the year of 1989. At that same time, other venues of gambling were introduced to the state. A very strong competition that I'm going to look you right in the face hurt us real bad. And you can watch the foal chart go down. As you see it going down, we're going to go down to a point where at the lowest point the track closed. 2 years later, we opened up, and for 4 years, 5 years, we struggled. No one wanted to make the investment of buying more horses. No one wanted to make the investment of building another farm, not knowing what was going to happen here. Luckily, through a lot of hard work, which the track and even back in those days I was involved in, we managed to convince the legislature to give us a card club to help us get back on our feet because we weren't going to make it. No way we were going to make it. If you look at the chart here, we got the Canterbury Card Club opened in just the summer of 1999, and you watch the foal count start going back up. The reason it goes back up is because people like me that raise, breed, and foal and race racehorses would make the investment to go out and breed a mare, knowing that 3 years down the road, I may be able to race at Canterbury Park. When I say may, there's a lot of things you got to go through before that horse even gets there. But the confidence in the track has to be there. As you see, it got up to 2006. That's because you gave us a card club, which we were very thankful of. It helped us. But we said at that time it was not the answer. It was really a thumb on the dike is what it was. What happened in 2006, several other states around us, legislators realized that their horse industry was going down fast. And the racino started coming in. Indiana, Pennsylvania, Iowa, you just go around the state of Minnesota, they all have racinos. What the racino did is gave the state revenue, it gave the county revenue, it gave the city revenue, and it gave enough money to the purses to get us back up to this high peak. Now, if I could go to the next chart, please. This is a chart of purses. Pretty interesting. If you look at these two charts, to the left is when we started, when people were willing to invest. You lay them on top of each other, those charts are identical, and they're two different things. One's the number of foals, the other one's the purses. Now, I don't pretend to be a genius, but I can tell you, I can put those charts on top of each other, and they match. So over this many years, purses have to drive the industry. Next card, please. In these states that I told you about around us that started Racino's, I just wanted to have you look at Indiana. If you take a look here, you'll see the dotted line coming down. That's when they got their Racino. See the chart skyrocketing? That's the number of foals. Louisiana, New Mexico, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, all the states that did it all have the same response. Purses drive foals. We are business, you know, we might just look like farmers, but we are somewhat businessmen. You cannot take the type of investment we do in a horse without any idea that you're ever going to get your money back. You can't do it. So if we go to the next chart, it'll help you understand what the horse industry does for the state of Minnesota. What I did is I went back through my books, and we are one of the larger thoroughbred farms in Minnesota. And I took one horse, and I figured the cost from the time that mare was bred, until she was at the farm, which they're usually there 30 days before foaling, from the time she has the baby, the cost of her and the baby there. Now we go through the first year, which we call the weanling year. We go through the second year, which we call the yearling year. And the third year is the two-year-old year. That's the first year you have a chance to race the horse. Conservatively, one horse, $30,255. If you have, back here where we showed 1,000 foal, that's $35 million for one crop of 1 year of horses. That's just thoroughbreds. That's just us. If you take those numbers and you look how they're broken down, I tried to do it on the bottom of this chart, and you all got this in your handouts. But board includes mare care, hay, grain, supplements. We've got the veterinarians. We've got the horseshoers. We've got the administrative guys. I built a farm. The fencing, astronomical, all done in Minnesota by Minnesota people. This is money that stays here. But one horse pays all those people a portion of their salaries. Every state that's done this, Pennsylvania went from roughly a $2 billion industry to over four and 44,000 new jobs just in the equine industry. Indiana, 30,000. The jobs are there. We can supply the horses. All we're asking this state is to give us back what we had, what you gave, what the people of this state gave us in 1982. They gave it to us. They voted. They said, go. We reacted. We spent a lot of money. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people built farms, bought horses, did everything they can to support it. 5 years later, yes, it happened. Native American gambling, yes, it's a reality. It hurt. It hurt us too much. So what do you say? Back then, you know, there's some days where I wake up, I wish we would have said, fine, die. But we kept fighting. We kept fighting. We went into the card club. We did the best we could. We still had an industry. Back then, I think the University of Minnesota, back when we were at our lowest point, estimated the horse industry in Minnesota at $1 billion. $1 billion at the lowest point. At the highest point, you know, I'm not an economist, but if at the lowest point you're $1 billion and you have one-tenth the horses in my industry, I would say an even double is not too hard to think about, or more. Jobs, I know. I can tell you right now how many people I employ at my farm. I've made it perfectly clear to all my employees that if a Racino doesn't come, it's the end of Blue Valley Farm. I can no longer get up every morning and go out and sell x-ray equipment so I can support people to feed horses and not get any return. I can't do it anymore. If you drive from Rochester, Minnesota, come up Highway 52, look at both sides of that highway. I happen to have a stallion down in Cannon Falls. I was there yesterday. You know how many farms are rotting on the side of that road? They're all over the place. Those were all multi $100,000, $200,000, $2 million, $3 million farms, bringing tons of money into this state. And I don't want to use the word criticize, so I won't. I hold nothing against anybody making a living. I don't care how they make it. Our state decided, along with everybody, that we were going to have gaming. We did it. It didn't work. It killed my industry. Yes, I'm mad. I'm very angry because my industry wasn't looked at that day. They just said, okay, let them die. We're asking for a chance to give the state $100 to $150 million a year to put into his fund. I'm asking to give you back a $2.5 billion industry, and that $150 million will be nothing compared to the money made in the horse industry, paid out in salaries, goods, hay, grain. I mean, it's huge. It's nothing. And you know what? We're not asking for a penny. We don't want highways built into the track. We don't want stadiums built. We just want to go back where we were. We want to go back to a viable industry. Please, think about it. Pretend you're in an industry. You took everything you had and you put it in there because your state overwhelmingly voted. Each person got to vote, not just the legislature, each person. They overwhelmingly said, let's go. Today, those numbers are exactly the same. Every poll I've seen is 70% or higher that wants a racino. Every poll I've seen, University of St. Cloud, 92% of Minnesotans gambled last year. 92%. Now, it may be lottery, it may be pull tabs, it may be horses, it may be Mystic Lake, it may be treasure. I don't care where they do it. That's their right. But for some reason, we have gotten in our heads that we're going to tell 92% of the people they're wrong and kill an industry doing it. So I thank you for your time. If there's any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you very much. We're going to move on to Ms. Meeks. And for the testifiers that we have here, we're going to try to continue to move this and get everyone heard. I'm going to ask you if you can, at all possible, try to stay within that three-minute time period because we have a ton. And again, I say this is for information. I believe that this needed to be heard because there's been so much talk about it throughout this session already. And so with that, Ms. Meeks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had good morning written down, then good afternoon. I'll change it to good evening. And committee members, my name is Annette Meeks, and I'm here as a volunteer board member of Citizens Against Gambling Expansion. I'm here with you tonight to share information about the problems associated when state government gambles on revenues from racinos as a method of balancing our budget and, frankly, increasing our revenues. Contrary to what you've been told by those who propose slot machines as an easy way to get rich, slot machines at racetracks won't create easy money. Frankly, more gambling creates one sure thing, more problems, because it creates more compulsive gamblers. It's no secret why the owners of Canterbury Park and Running Aces want thousands of slot machines in our Twin City suburbs. According to Professor Earl Grinnells, an economist from Baylor University who studied casino gambling for nearly two decades, casinos generate 80% of their revenues from slot machines. Of that 80% slot machine revenue, 60% of it is generated from problem or pathological gamblers. Of those problem gamblers, experts tell us between 1 and 5% become addicts. More gambling revenue for the state creates more problems for every state that's decided to tax their residents this way. Supporters of revenue say that we already have 18 casinos in Minnesota. Several more won't make a difference, but it will. Proximity and availability are everything to creating problem gamblers. Experts in addictive behavior have proven a link between having a casino nearby and higher gambling addiction rates. Adults living within 50 miles of a casino have twice the rate of pathological or problem gambling as those who don't live near one. Again, I quote Professor Grinnells, "We know that anything that increases ease of access also increases the speed at which gambling can lead to addictive behavior," close quote. Slot machines have been called the crack cocaine of gambling because of the speed of addiction. South Carolina proved what happens when you remove slot machines. 6 months after they removed their slot machines from the state, gambling hotlines fell from 200 per month to zero. The number of gamblers anonymous groups grew smaller by two-thirds. According to the National Council on State Legislatures, more than half the states have considered gambling legislation last year, including eight racino states that sought to further expand gambling or give financial breaks further to the industry. These states were revisiting racino legislation because racinos, just like every other get-rich-quick scheme, isn't the answer to our state's problems. The Indiana legislature authorized racinos in 2007 and opened two of them 1 year later. According to newspaper accounts, quote, the first coin had barely dropped into a slot machine before the Racinos returned to the statehouse to lobby for better terms, close quote. Interesting, last year Racino advocates told us that slot machines would help revive the horse racing industry in Minnesota. This year they're telling us it's economic development and jobs, jobs, jobs. Let me be frank as I close. Racinos are about one thing, gambling and increasing our state revenues. An editorial writer in a state hemorrhaging red ink like Minnesota facetiously suggested that perhaps a solution to the state's continuing revenue problems and declining gambling revenue would be for the state to buy some Powerball tickets, where the odds of winning that grand prize are 1 in 195 million. And those are about the same odds of Minnesota winning if we add slot machines to our racetracks. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Meeks. Next, we'll have Mr. Dick Day. Welcome back to the Senate.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for having me. You know, when I first started this thing, I had black hair, and we're going to build a baseball stadium. So I sat at Canterbury Park for a year, and sorry to say, we had to have the taxpayers build us the baseball stadium, but that's the way life is. Thanks. It's good to be with my 40-year friend, Dave Sinjum. Played basketball together when we both weighed about 140 pounds many, many years ago. Anyway, I'm here to tell you something, and you can think about this, and I hope that you realize what I'm telling you. I've been doing it for a few years, so I'm pretty sure of all the numbers. Racino went into 12 states, and it brought them in $2.5 billion. It employs 29,000 people. You've heard of the horse industry. But we live in a state where it has $1.5 billion net income with 18 casinos with no competition. The only state in the United States that doesn't receive money. No corporate tax, no property tax, sales tax. I could show you a letter from Ward Innes, Revenue Commissioner, where you collect lodging, tobacco, liquor, and they keep it all. To the tune of about $19 million just a few years ago. It's probably more now. We're the only state. If you were reading a paper just recently, just 2-3 days ago, what does it say? Indiana. Read these. We're talking $400-500 million. Iowa, 300 and some million. Every state around us, millions and millions of dollars. But what does Minnesotans say? Minnesotans are watching this issue. They're really tuned in. And I'll tell you why they're tuned in. Because 72% of them, 3 out of every 4 people that you talk to on the street, and I dare anybody here, any committee member, to invite me to their community, and I will not receive 9 out of every 10 people that I talk to. 9 out of 10. I don't care if it's a Rotary, the Lions Club, because I've been doing it for 2 years around the state. And I ask them, and they go, this is a no-brainer, Dick. 9 out of 10 people say, whoa, why can't we do this? Well, It's been a little bit difficult, but please remember that there's a lot of money in this. The polling has always been 62 to 80%, as we noticed, 72%, 3 out of 4. You just heard the horse industry. This is a jobs bill. This is an incubator program. Do you know how that Hormel Corporation and the IBM Corporation went to Decorah, Iowa? Through the lottery funds of Iowa. Iowa takes half of their lottery funds and puts it in economic development. That's why they went down there. So we sit in Minnesota and we say, and by the way, please, nobody look at me and say we do not need revenue. You might not need tax revenue, but you need revenue. When thousands of kids every day get off the buses to come to our capital, they leave schools that are pretty well taken care of, and they come here and we got scaffolding around our doors because our capital is falling down. My goodness, please tell me, what would happen to the first person that has a bill that says we need $200 million to fix his capital? At the first committee, the guy will say, how are you going to pay for it? That will be, trust me, after 19 years of being here, I will tell you, that's what will happen. So when somebody says, this is jobs, this is for jobs and things that we wanted to do, and I don't personally... If somebody says we want to put the money into something else, so do it. But keep in mind, and this is important, We went from 4,000 slot machines to 25,000 slot machines. The doors are busting down. When somebody comes to the table and tells me about gambling, I say, look around and talk to the people that are expanding so much. All we want is competitiveness. We do not want any of the Native Americans' money. We don't want, all we want to do is a level playing field. We want to compete. We want to compete. We're going to be 2 miles down the road. Mystic Lake has more slot machines than only one other operation in the United States. They have more slot machines than anybody in Vegas, anybody in Atlantic City. It's sitting right here. It's in our community, and it's going gangbusters. I don't have a problem with that. I don't care how much money they make or whatever they do. But I will tell you, don't you think in Minnesota a little competitiveness would be good? We already say you never have to pay any taxes forever, which was probably the worst compact ever written in the entire world. But we're saying you can just have this forever. And we're saying, hey, what about us? Now, I will tell you, we've had bipartisan support in the past. In fact, last year, Al Junkie and Dan Sparks in the Democratic Party carried the bill. This year, we got two Republicans to carry the bill. So all we're saying is, you know what? It's time. I hope you look at it with an open mind. I know that we all know there's $18 to $22 million that exchanged hands around this Capitol in the last 7 years. If you ever want to sit down with me and have the statistics, I have them all here. You can look at them. You can tell where the money goes and where it went. Please, you know, I hope that you're looking and when Racino, and we all know it's probably going to be the end of the day and whatever is going to happen is going to happen. I even sit around and I talk to people and they say, well, as I tried to do with this stadium, if somebody said to you, you know, we really do want to build a stadium, I'm sure if you people don't realize that $30 million a year and a 15-year bonding could build a stadium if you wanted to do that. What we sit around, we're all talking about we're going to build roads and whatever. This is the money to do the infrastructure things if you want to do it. It's here. Now, if you want to do it for early childhood education, what Senator Sinjum is proposing is wonderful. It's for jobs. Because you know what jobs do? When a guy gets a job or a gal gets a job, they can feed their family. They give income to the state of Minnesota. They give income, and every community is better off. So I hope that I talk fast. I talk as fast and quick as I can. I will tell you that this is absolutely something that everybody should look at. And if for some reason you can sit with other Minnesotans any Saturday or any Sunday and buy into something that says, oh, my goodness gracious, if we did that, Dick, I'd become a gambler tomorrow because I could go to Canterbury. You know that's not right. We got gambling at every place. There's gas stations and our clubs have charitable gambling. There's gambling all over the place. And so it isn't like this is something that's new. The difference is this would bring the state a couple $100 million of money that people need. You can pick and choose and do whatever, but please realize that this is something that's out there. We are here proposing it. We hope that we've at least shared with you some of the passion that some of us have had. And, yeah, we've been cut off at the pass a lot. And I know why we're cut off, and I'm not going to get into it because you're all smart enough to know that. You understand big, lots of money involved in thing. You know there's probably 45, 50 lobbyists working on the other side. And it's interesting because they never say, well, get rid of gambling. It's always expansion. It's when Senator Day arrives with his Racino bill that everybody says, oh, expansion is bad. And yet tonight, the semi can be at the back door of any one of 18 casinos unloading 100 more. Nobody cares. So thank you, Chairman. I talk fast and try and spit it out as fast as I can. And Senator Sinjum, it's good to be with you again.
Senator Day, thank you for your spirited testimony this evening. 19 years of passion on the Senate floor. I'm sorry I missed all that. Yeah. Next, we'll have Mr. John Darris. And as you approach, let me just mention that we are approaching the limit for those that are providing testimony in support. So if you could please limit your testimony to 2 or 3 minutes, and then we'll move to the others. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Darris, and I'm a member of the board of directors of Running Aces. And we're here today to support the Racino proposal. We think it's a great proposal. We are in our fourth year of operation at Running Aces. We are located where 35E and 35W come together in the beautiful city of Columbus, just south of Forest Lake. In a recent Star and Tribune poll that the gentleman already referred to, 72% were in support of tax-paying gaming. 72%, that poll is 10 days old. These are two up-and-running casino facilities. If you put electronic gaming devices in these two places, the flow of capital to the state of Minnesota would be almost immediate, at no cost at all to the state of Minnesota. And these two institutions, if you went there today, you'd see employees of the state of Minnesota in both of these places regulating these two places. The state of Minnesota already regulates these two casinos, and they do a fine job, the Minnesota Racing Commission, appointed by the governor. We're told that this would raise over $100 million a year, or $250 in the biennium, but it's at no cost to the state. In fact, we would add 1,000 jobs or more, roughly 500 at Running Aces, probably more at Canterbury. And then there's the jobs, the building jobs, of expanding these two places, because they'd both have to be expanded, and the people in the building trades would get those jobs. This is, if you will, a painless fee, a user's fee. In other words, this is over $100 million a year. That's $1 billion if you stretch it out to 7 years, that you don't have to pay unless you want to. If you don't want to pay it, don't go there. It's the most painless tax that I've seen come down the line in a long, long time. There's 1,000 new jobs we talked about. And also people say, well, how does your community receive you? I have a collection of resolutions that were passed in favor of the Racino bill just this last year. First by our host city, the city of Columbus and Anoka County, the Forest Lake Chamber of Commerce, the North Metro Mayors Association, representing 19 cities in the North Metro area, the Metro North Chamber of Commerce, that's a separate chamber of commerce, representing the whole North Metro area, and Anoka United, which is the development committee of the county of Anoka. I just want to tell you that we are well-received, well-liked in our community. This is a terrific idea, and we wanted to come here today and support it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. If we could have Les Bernal, if you could please approach the table. State your name for the record, and please proceed, sir.
Good evening. My name is Les Bernal, and I'm the executive director of Stop Predatory Gambling, which is a national organization based in Washington, D.C. And our mission is to get government out of the predatory gambling business because it's a failed policy. And we're also the most diverse social movement in America. So 2 years ago, a handful of McDonald's customers got sick in an outbreak of salmonella poisoning because of some problem tomatoes. But even though a tiny number of people were hurt, McDonald's stopped serving sliced tomatoes everywhere in the country. It was a major national story. So today before you is a proposal to add more casinos into the state that no one denies will make tens of thousands of your constituents very sick in a way that reduces their lives to nothing. So the casinos say, you know, it's not the slot machine, it's not their unrivaled predatory marketing practices. They say the gambler is the problem. But is there anyone who called those McDonald's patrons who got sick problem eaters? A Philadelphia newspaper recently quoted the general manager of a Harris casino in Chester, Pennsylvania, as saying the customers in his database visited an average of almost 5 times a week. That's 250 times a year. The president of Sands Casino in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, admitted to similar numbers, and most of them are coming within 20 miles of the casino. So 5 times a week, 250 times a year, from within a 20-mile radius. Do you think the databases of customers at the existing tribal casinos here in Minnesota have very different numbers? I mean, and allowing casinos at the racetracks would also produce similar results. So, you know, right now in Illinois, there are more people on the state's self-exclusion list. And these are people who have publicly acknowledged that they are gambling addicts, most of whom have had their lives turned upside down. So there's more people on the self-exclusion list than there are people who work at the casinos. So the reason why this matters so much is this is the casino business model. Casinos make 90% of their profits from 10% of their gamblers. It's the most predatory business in the country, and its business model is based on addiction and pushing people into debt. And that's a truth that remains unchanged regardless whether they are operated by a Native American tribe, a horse track, or the local fraternal organization. So this past January, 60 Minutes broadcast its investigation into slot machines. And the show was based on the research of MIT's Dr. Natasha Schell. And Dr. Schell said that a slot machine is designed to be so effective at extracting money from people that it's a product, quote, that approaches every player as a potential addict. So if 60 Minutes, the top-rated news program in America, thought Dr. Schell's research into the highly addictive and predatory design of slot machines was important enough to the public interest to highlight it on national television in prime time, then I respectfully request that this committee and the media covering these proposals, before they are discussed or written about any further, to first prove that slot machines and casinos are safe to be promoted to the public. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Next, we'll have Kevin Lacey, or Lisi.
Thank you.
Sir, if you could state your name for the record, and please proceed.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Kevin Lacey. I'm the chairman of the Boys Ford Band of Chippewa in northern Minnesota, Net Lake and Lake Vermilion areas of the state. And I'm here today to offer opposition to House File 1352, the Racino Bill. I believe that this bill represents a serious threat to my tribe, as well as others in Minnesota. Congress passed the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act in 1988 to provide Indian tribes with an economic development tool for their communities. No other federal or state policy has been so successful in achieving this goal. Although many tribes, including my own, have a long way to go, gaming has made an unbelievable difference in our lives and changed the future of our children and grandchildren. We still, again, have a long way to go, and we talk about a level playing field. We still have the highest rates of diabetes, of heart disease, still working on our unemployment. So we would gladly trade that level playing field. We still have a long way to go in that area. But you may believe that our operations would not be affected by racinos at Canterbury Park and Running Aces, but in fact, that's not true. We stand to lose big time. First, you should know that a considerable portion of our customer base comes from the metro area. While it is true that much of our business is local, we get a significant number of guests from the Twin Cities, especially in the summer months. A dramatic increase in the gaming opportunities in the metro area, especially in the North Metro area, will result in a substantial loss of revenue for us. Second, the Racino Bill you are considering today places no limit on the number or location of future racinos. Any licensed racetrack may become a racino, and the legislature will have no control on who gets licensed or how many licenses are issued. This legislation effectively takes the power to expand gambling out of the legislature's hands and turns it over to the Racing Commission, which currently holds the power to license racetracks. Even as we speak here today, a third racetrack, Racino, with a possible horse track and go-kart racing and everything else is being planned for the Hibbing area. That would be a devastating development right in our own backyard. It would set our tribe's economic and social progress back many years. I want to speak about a particular aspect of this bill, the Minnesota Futures Fund. Am I the only person in this room who finds it ironic that this body would consider putting 6,500 jobs in tribal gaming and government at risk in order to create a jobs program? Indian gaming, again, is the single most successful job creation program the state has ever seen, and the state didn't have to pay for it. I just want to close here with what that would mean to a Racino with 6,500 jobs lost in our state. And here's what we're talking about. $235 million in household income lost to Indian and non-Indian families, mostly in rural Minnesota. $539 million cut from purchases of goods and services from over 10,000 Minnesota vendors. Significant cuts in health care spending by tribes, which now totals around $130 million annually, 88% of which is spent in rural Minnesota. The cancellation of new and planned capital investment and construction projects, meaning hundreds of lost construction job opportunities, significant reduction in philanthropic giving and community sponsorships, harmful cuts in tribal government programs for health care, education, elder services, chemical dependency, law enforcement, emergency service, and urban Indian services. In closing, Mr. Chairman and members of this committee, every time the Native Americans had something, someone wanted to take it away from it. So your vote, when you do vote, I ask you to oppose the Racino bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lacey. I believe Ms. Anderson, Marge Anderson. I'm sure Chair Daley did, but we're on a time limit here, and I want to make sure that we have the opportunity to give everyone time to speak, and let's be concise and to the point here tonight. Thank you. Welcome. Please state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Marge Anderson, and I'm the Chief Executive of Lenox Band of Ojibwe. When I was a little girl, I remember being spit at because I was Indian. I was made fun of because of my raggedy clothes. I remember a teacher who told me, shame on you, over and over again. It wasn't for misbehavior, I think it was because I was too Indian to know how to be like other kids. Other Mille Lacs Band elders tell stories like mine, but somehow we kept a will to be ourselves. Poverty was all we knew. Ojibwe culture was the only experience we had to hold on to. The only things we had that other people wanted were handmade baskets and hand-picked berries that were sold on a roadside. Even that privilege was taken away. After generations of poverty, we finally got the chance to start chipping away at it when Congress passed the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act in 1988. A year later, we signed compacts, gaming compacts with the state of Minnesota. We opened two casinos in 91 and 92. We're so happy to finally see a ray of hope for our people and neighbors who desperately needed jobs. But it wasn't long before our happiness was joined by fear. Fear that this would all be taken away. Every year we had this fear that the state of Minnesota will expand gaming. We worry because this has always been our history. Anytime our people have something of value, others want it. Mille Lacs Band opposes expansion of gaming. It would be harmful to our band members, employees, and neighbors. We continue to have poverty on our reservation. The effects of poverty will likely linger for decades. We will continue to make progress in meeting needs as long as we have the resources to do so. The Mille Lacs Band has chosen to use the gaming revenues to provide jobs, invest in economic development, build community infrastructure, and provide programs and services to band members. In order to do these things, Mille Lacs Band government taxes Grand Casino revenues at 100%. Just like lottery revenues are reserved for the state use, our gaming revenues are reserved for band use. This is exactly what the state of Minnesota intended when it chose to allow Indian gaming. State leaders charge us with creating jobs and boosting the economy in greater Minnesota. We've done exactly that. I urge you not to make a move that would harm the very people that in gaming was originally designed to help. Angela Hankins now will now tell you more about the economic impact of Grand Casinos and how gaming expansion will affect our communities, our business, and region. I have much more detail to provide about how the tribal government puts gaming revenues to good use. You can read about that in my written testimony that has already been submitted. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Angela Hikes, I believe that's, hope that's correct. And Robbie Sawyer can come up in the other chair. While Ms. Hikes continues. Please state your name.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Angela Hikes. I am the Commissioner of Corporate Affairs for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe.
Welcome.
Thank you. I am responsible at the Corporate Commission. That particular entity is responsible for running both Grand Casino Mille Lacs and Grand Casino Hinkley. Grand Casino Mille Lacs located near Onamia, Minnesota, and Grand Casino Hinkley located in Hinkley, Minnesota, both rural Minnesota communities. The first thing I'd like to talk about is our facilities on a combined basis employ approximately 3,000 people, and 93% of those people live in rural Minnesota communities. More than 90% of our jobs are held by non-Indians, and these are jobs that carry full-time benefits, health care, 401k, and time off. They're steady jobs and good jobs that were not so long ago in very short supply in rural Minnesota. Since the casinos have opened, we have increased jobs 35% in Mille Lacs County and 70% in Pine County. Steady, reliable jobs in trusted businesses. And I think when we talk about jobs, these are jobs that were a result of economic development that came to these rural communities 20 years ago, and it's economic development that is still needed today. In addition to what we do in terms of providing jobs, we create a significant amount of local commerce. Nearly 70% of our purchases come from vendors that are in Minnesota, and of those 70%, nearly 48% of those purchases are made with vendors that are located outside of the Twin Cities metropolitan area. The band and our casino properties are the largest property taxpayer in Pine County, and we're the second largest property taxpayer in Mille Lacs County. We've also paid nearly $92 million in federal and state taxes based on the wages that we pay to our employees. So we are taxpayers. And rural Minnesota has really been the beneficiary of this positive ripple effect in these economies as a result of those operations being located there. You may first believe that, given the location of our facilities well north of the Twin Cities metro area, that there is not an impact if expansion of gaming occurs within the Twin Cities or Seven County metro area, and that is not the case. And it's not the case because a significant amount of our guest base and a significant amount of the individuals that frequent our properties come from the Twin Cities. This area, also in the Seven County metro area, is home to nearly 54% of the adult population. A high concentration of adults, a high concentration of people that have a desire and a propensity to game. In other words, it's the heart of the gaming market, it's the heart of our gaming market, and it's going to be the heart of the gaming market for these proposed new facilities. We hear a lot about Grand Casinos not wanting to compete. We don't want a level playing field, and I'm here to tell you that competition is not the issue. We already compete. We compete with a significant amount of gaming that's going on in the state. But as with any business, location is really the critical influence on where a casino customer chooses to game. Indian casinos right away are hindered in the fact that we can only be located on land that is held in federal trust for our tribes. Private-owned casinos, state-owned casinos can choose to be located anywhere, and naturally, why wouldn't they be located within the population centers? This alone gives them a competitive advantage, and it is alone a competitive advantage that we cannot overcome. Further, Minnesota is a mature gaming market. Gaming has been occurring in this state for a long time. And rather than this attraction of new gamers to these particular facilities, you're going to see a shift of the gaming that's going on in the state today and a shift away from tribal casinos to those areas. And it's going to be a shift in the benefit that has come to the rural regions because of our facilities and the job creation that we've done. Depending on the nature of the proposal that's being talked about, we're making estimations that it could impact our revenues by near 40%. As a result, our businesses are going to have to respond. We're going to have to respond and start with stronger marketing, which is going to erode our profit margins even further, but we're going to respond. We're going to respond with having to cut jobs. Fewer employees with access to health insurance, and it's just going to move down the line. We're going to reduce the amount of business we spend with vendors. It's going to be a reduction in the economic development that's occurred in our regions and a harm to the local businesses that rely not only on our casino traffic, but also the business that our casino associates that live in those rural economies have come to rely on. People in East Central Minnesota are going to face serious financial implications. They're likely going to need an increase in related resources because they are jobless and they do not have health care. And I think the facts regarding the negative impacts to the number of regions in rural Minnesota need to be thought about when you're thinking about what the related benefits are going to be, because it's going to be an offset of those benefits and further burden the state's already outstretched resources. You've heard a lot about the benefits. I hope you have some consideration also in terms of what the consequences are. And I think an important question is, how does the transfer of jobs from rural communities into the metro area really constitute a net gain for this state? And what other economic development opportunity is going to be able to go to East Central Minnesota that's going to recreate the job loss that we're talking about? The Mille Lacs Band opposes gaming expansion, and we oppose it because of what it does for the job creation that we've been able to do to the state and the wide-reaching economic damage that you're going to see in rural Minnesota. So we're hopeful that those will be considerations when you're talking about really what is believed to be a net gain for the state. Thank you, Chairman, and members of the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Hyatt. Mr. Sawyer. Again, folks, I'm going to remind you that we will continue to go here. I believe we have 7 testifiers left, but we have to be concerned that we might be under call and we might have to adjourn this meeting. So, Mr. Sawyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee. My name is Robbie Sawyer. I'm a 15-year associate of Grand Casino Hinckley and currently a manager in the marketing department. My story is one of many in which people have found opportunity because of Grand Casinos. 3,000 employees, countless business owners, and the residents of East Central Minnesota have benefited from the economic impact that surrounds Grand Casinos. I'm also a lifelong resident of East Central Minnesota. I grew up in Moose Lake, 30 miles from Hinckley. I started working at Grand Casino in 1996 and have found nothing but opportunity since. Over the past 15 years, I've worked very hard and I've been promoted several times within the organization. Grand Casino helped me with that. On 2 separate occasions, they adjusted my work schedules, they provided me with tuition reimbursement so I could earn an associate's degree and a bachelor's degree. Opportunities like the ones I've had at Grand Casino are rare in our region. Most businesses do not provide the level of benefits that Grand Casino does. My wife is also an associate of Grand Casino. We know as well as anyone how critical the casino's well-being is to families in East Central Minnesota. Any job losses in my household would force us to move away from our families, away from our friends, just to find a comparable job. It's difficult to understand why our existing jobs would be less important than proposed new jobs in the Twin Cities. Why put precious jobs in East Central Minnesota in danger? Today, I am urging you to strongly consider the thousands of jobs like mine that gaming expansion would endanger. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is the mayor of Hibbing here?
Yes, I am.
Would you like to come up and testify next? And then I believe there's someone from the Iron Range Racing Complex?
Yeah, we're together.
Okay. Maybe you can both come up to the table together there. Mr. Mayor, welcome. Please state your name.
My name is Rick Cannata. I'm mayor of Hibbing, Minnesota. I'm down here because Mr. Fido with Iron Ranging Racing and the Racino that they're looking for will be built in Hibbing. I sit here and I listen to people talk about jobs. Are you going to lose gaming here? People are going to, well, if anybody knows the Iron Range, we're all small communities along the range. We're all in desperate need of economic development. I wear 2 hats. I'm the mayor of Hibbing, but I'm in the construction trade too. By passing Racino's, it'll help I know everybody's worried about losing people from the rural communities. Well, northern Minnesota's pretty rural and pretty far up north. That would have just alone the jobs for the construction trade and the permanent jobs with the Racino in northern Minnesota. Mr. Fido knows, has numbers and figures for that. But I'm here to support the Racino and to pass it in legislation. And I know for a fact, I'm a common person. I play pull tabs. I go to Fortune Bay. My mom, she'll probably kill me for saying this, she'll go there. She'll still go there. You know, she, and what we're planning to propose up in northern Minnesota is more than a horse racing track. It's snowmobile racing, motocross, and all the other development that'll come with it. But I thank you very much for letting me speak. I'll let Mr. Fido talk a little more about it.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Chairman, my name is John Fido. I'm an economic development coordinator in northeastern Minnesota. I represent a group of private investors who've been working on this project for about 15 years. The site is currently located in Hibbing, Minnesota, on about 625 acres. The project entails a variety of different racing, including quarter horse racing, and as the mayor indicated, car racing, snowmobile racing, a full year of destination attraction that would accrue a substantial amount of benefit to the Central Iron Range. As the mayor pointed out very accurately, what the Iron Range faces is an ongoing up and down in the economy. What we're hoping to do with projects like this is to even that out and to create a diversification in the economic base. We've worked for a number of years, in fact, since 2005 with Canterbury Downs, and in the last year with Running Aces, on a variety of different elements that could assist us in putting this particular project together. We support Senate File 1046. We would like to see a couple small amendments incorporated into that piece of legislation, one that would allow us to see a small reduction of the racing days to 41 that would reflect the change in the current climate in northeastern Minnesota, which, as everybody knows, is just a little bit chillier than the rest of the state. And the other is to give us a preference, not grant us a license, but give us a preference as we approach the Racing Commission to make our application. We're talking about a project that will create between $35 and $40 million worth of new investment, about 600 new permanent jobs, and a variety of different elements on this particular piece of property. We're hopeful that we can do something to see this legislation passed, because it really is an economic impact of major proportions for the next 25 years in northeastern Minnesota.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you for coming down, Mayor.
Pine County Commissioner, I believe it's Stephen Hallen. Did he make it?
He wasn't able to make
it. He wasn't? All right. Thank you.
His written testimony was submitted today.
Correct.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Senjum.
I am not sure how the time is, you know, is divided at this point, and it would certainly have to be fair. We do have Mr. Loftus here as well from the Commissioner's office. I don't think he's here to speak one side or another, just to explain the fund.
You can come forward, Senator. Here's the last three that I have is Mr. Loftus, Phil Krenke, and Corey Merrifield. So if Mr. Loftus wants to come up, and either Corey or Phil can fill the other chair. Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mark Loftus. I'm employed at the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. As Senator Senjum knows, and as he said, I need to be neutral as to the funding source here on behalf of the department and the governor, but I do want to testify about economic development and the needs that we have. As a department, we work with companies all the time, from very small companies to Fortune 500 businesses, and they all have a lot of factors that influence them, whether it's customers or suppliers or infrastructure, the quality of their workforce, any number of factors, but increasingly the availability of economic development incentives and our ability to provide assistance to companies and help them grow in Minnesota is part of the picture. So we have staff who work diligently, whether they're in our business development group or trade office or our small business office, trying to help a whole variety of companies, but we have very little to offer to them in terms of any kind of economic development programs. Senator Senjum is right. Actually, it's about less than $1.5 million that we have in our Minnesota Investment Fund today. That compares with other states and some, in fact, even other counties in other states. You've heard about Iowa and their program of economic development somewhere north of $83 million. The state of Ohio just passed a program of $1.5 billion for 1 year in economic development programs. There's even a county in the center of Florida that has a $25 million economic development fund. Now, I'm not here as an economic development representative to say that we have to spend as much as other states on incentives and assistance, or that we even need to come as close to some of those states. We do have many natural economic development advantages here. We want to build on those, and we want to make sure that we capture opportunities for growing businesses here as well. So that's just my short testimony, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the chance to speak to you, and I would say that we want to continue to find ways to fund economic development in Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Loftus. Mr. Merrifield.
Mr. Chair, thanks for having me. I know we're short on time, so I've abbreviated this, and we'll keep it brief.
Please state your name for the record.
Corey Merrifield, founder of SaveTheBikes.org.
Thank you.
So as the founder of the grassroots group SaveTheBikes.org, I spend considerable time working with people from across the state of Minnesota to educate them about reasonable and fiscally responsible methods to finance a biking stadium. Today, however, I'm here as a citizen of Shakopee and a subject matter expert from the staffing and employment industry. My home is precisely between Mystic Lake and Canterbury Park. Every day when I drive to work and drive home, I see people driving through my neighborhood to head to Mystic. And every day when I'm watching potential tax revenue for my community and my state drive right by my house and can't help but think, what a waste. Not a single dime that they spend at the casino will circulate back into the community or state coffers. Now, you can change that by allowing Canterbury Park and Running Aces to add an existing form of gambling at an existing gambling facility. People will take a right instead of a left, which will create jobs in my community and make Shakopee a year-round destination when the horse track and Valley Fair are closed. As for the traffic, I expect that to increase too. With the Racino and casino that close together, people will drive all across the Midwest to go to the horse track, the casino, golf courses, and all of the other attractions we have to offer south of the river. Now, on one hand, members of the Mystic Lake Tribe will tell you that a Racino will take jobs from their establishment, but then on the other hand will say that there is no money in gambling. Last time I checked, McDonald's didn't go out of business when Burger King or Wendy's opened up across the street from them. Capitalism is based in competition, and we're ready to see tribal casinos operate competitively. Tribal members will also have you believe that opening up a Racino will create more gambling addicts. 3 years ago, Southside Liquors opened up in my neighborhood across from Target and Shakopee. I've yet to see any new alcoholics in my neighborhood. Minnesota citizens against gambling expansion will say that gambling preys on the economically disadvantaged. What they won't tell you is that they are funded by Native American casinos that don't want to see competition or free market open up. Now, I would like to point out that Racinos, in terms of Canterbury Park and Running Aces, are not readily accessible by public transportation from the metro area and would be close to other Native American casinos, similar to what you see in Las Vegas, where casinos are closer together. The Racinos aren't readily accessible by the poor and would most likely increase business at neighboring casinos, similar to what we see in Branson, Missouri. In closing, I want to talk about jobs. Every quarter, my employer publishes its economic outlook for the next quarter. Manpower's Employment Outlook Survey is regarded as a key performance indicator for employment forecasting. For quarter two of 2011, this report shows that 16% of companies of every industry vertical intend to hire, except one. The construction industry is not pacing at that same recovery. This report shows that 10% of the construction companies in the country are expecting to lay off. That is one out of every 10 construction companies expecting to downsize. That is very close and similar to what we're seeing here in Minnesota. While overall unemployment is at 7%, the construction and labor industry is at 23% unemployment. That is one out of every five construction workers is sitting on the bench. The Racino jobs bill can change that. A Viking stadium will create over 7,500 construction jobs with hundreds of millions of dollars going to wages. There's no larger opportunity to put people back to work in Minnesota than by building a Viking stadium. By using Racino's jobs bill, you can take 15% of those construction workers and laborers off of unemployment, put them back on the job, and have them contributing to paying down our state deficit. As my good friend Dick Day says, it's a no-brainer, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Mr. Krenke, are you here? right. Senator Senjum, any final thoughts?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members for this hearing. I thought it was certainly a good hearing, a lot of information certainly provided. Let me say, Mr. Chair, I wouldn't be sitting here tonight if I thought this project was going to hurt tribal gaming. I think that we can coexist and, as has been pointed out, complement each other. I wouldn't be sitting here tonight if I didn't think the horse industry in Minnesota was important, and we have an opportunity here to save it. If we don't, we're going to lose it. And lastly, Mr. Chair, I wouldn't be sitting here tonight if I didn't think a jobs program in Minnesota was absolutely essential as we look forward. And we've got to compete. I mean, we've got to compete, as I said earlier, certainly in tax climate, certainly in regulatory climate, but there's a free agency element to this as well, Mr. Chair and members. We've got to be able to compete. As was pointed out, we've got $1.5 million in our fund. If you look at the Texas Enterprise Fund, as was pointed out in Governor Perry's sheet, $433 million. How do we compete against something like that? We don't need $400 million, but I think we have to be competitive. Racino gives us an opportunity. Mr. Chair and members, I thank you for the opportunity to have this hearing and to, again, get this out and have the conversation.
Thank you very much. Members, I believe they're waiting for us on the floor. With that, Senate File 1046 is on the table, and this meeting is adjourned.